Please note this is an extended amateur radio newsline bulletin and contains three breaks. The newscast begins following the tone. Amateur radio newsline report number 1821 with a release date of July 6, 2012 to follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST. Ham radio responds as a severe weather outbreak hits the Midwest and Mid-Atlantic U.S. An UDX record is set using the aging AMSAT Oscar 7 satellite. A big tower victory in Nevada, and Aaron King, AK4JG, is named the 2012 Amateur Radio Newsline Young Ham of the Year. Find out the details on Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 1821 coming your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline. Amateur Radio's first independent on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now reporting from Mississippi, here is Don Wilbanks, AE5DW.
The governors of several states have declared emergencies as temperatures rose in the aftermath of powerful storms that swept through the Mid-Atlantic region Friday night, June 29th. The storm did damage from Indiana to New Jersey, although the bulk of the destruction was felt in West Virginia, Washington, and suburban Virginia and Maryland. Amateur Radio Newsline's Fred Vobey, W8HDU, begins our coverage of this severe weather outbreak and what's known about the ham radio response so far.
Several states were stricken on June the 29th as a super derecho, a violent thunderstorm, left more than a 700-mile trail of destruction across the Midwest and Middle Atlantic on Friday, cutting power to millions and killing 13 people. A derecho is defined as a widespread and long-lived windstorm that accompanies rapid-moving showers or thunderstorms. The most severe derechos are given the adjective super. Winds gusted up to 91 miles per hour, equal to that of a Category 1 hurricane at the Fort Wayne International Airport in Fort Wayne, Indiana, on Friday afternoon. Wind gusts of up to 72 miles per hour were recorded at the KT8 APR repeater site, which is located at WLIO Television in Lima, Ohio, on Lima's west side. According to WLIO's chief meteorologist, Kyle Adams, on Sunday, July the 1st, quote, "Thousands here in west-central Ohio are still without power." According to the AEP website, over 600,000 people in Ohio have no power. They are comparing the magnitude of this event to the remnants of Hurricane Ike that came through in September of 2008. They are saying that all power is expected to be restored in 5 to 7 days. As the storm moved to the east-southeast, lightning and high winds of more than 80 miles per hour knocked down transmission structures, poles, power lines, and trees. The central Ohio counties of Franklin, Delaware, and Licking were the hardest hit, with approximately 345,000 customers affected. Statistically, on Sunday, July the 1st, 112,760 were without power in Indiana, 140,461 were without power in Kentucky. In Ohio and West Virginia, the number climbed to more than 600,000 each. As the storm strengthened and moved into Virginia, Virginia had over 2.5 million people out of power, and Maryland had more than 1.3 million out of power. Hams performed multifaceted roles, from local discussions between each other on what to do, some relaying storm information to the National Weather Service, and others using advanced ham technology to relay data on the storm and report damage to civil authorities. Hams in the counties where storms raged called repeaters to the east, warning them of what they would be experiencing in just moments, allowing them to mobilize before the storms hit. President Obama declared an emergency in the state of Ohio on Saturday, ordering federal aid to assist state and local efforts due to the emergency conditions from the severe storms. Now a second serious situation is unfolding from Indiana back into the Mid-Atlantic, where millions remain without power and temperatures are once again soaring. Temperatures in the south are expected to hit 110 degrees or more. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Fred Vobey, W8HDU, in Lima, Ohio.
Meanwhile, in Indiana.
Indiana's heat wave broke for a short time when strong storms raced across the north-central part of the state, causing widespread damage. The train of severe storm cells brought hail and high winds that toppled trees and snapped power lines, leaving thousands of Hoosiers in the dark and without power. Fort Wayne, Indiana was one of the hardest hit areas. Strong winds uprooted large trees and cracked power poles, isolating neighborhoods with downed power lines and tree branches. Allen County hams responded with emergency communications as Fort Wayne police and fire frequencies became jammed with news of widespread damage. Many reported dozens of traffic lights without power, throwing traffic into a citywide gridlock. Now, 1 week after the storm, officials report nearly 10,000 people still without power as daytime temperatures hover in the 98-degree range. Power crews from as far away as Oklahoma have arrived to help with the electrical problems. Dozens of Red Cross blood drives have been canceled in the wake of the storms, resulting in a shortfall of more than 1,000 potential blood donations leading into the 4th of July holiday. The Allen County Red Cross opened shelters for those without power. In Hamilton and Tipton counties, just southwest of Fort Wayne, amateur radio operators quickly scrambled to deal with the pop-up storms. There were reports of widespread wind damage across the two counties. Skywarn operators in Hamilton County relayed one report about a tree that had fallen across a car in Tipton County. Other counties in central and eastern Indiana reported only Skywarn activity as the rapidly building storms raced eastward into the Buckeye State. Reporting from Indianapolis, this is Jack Parker, W8ISH.
The same storm that wrought havoc across the Midwest and Mid-Atlantic states also took its toll on the Internet, including one very popular ham radio website. According to Fred Lloyd, AA7BQ, who owns QRZ.com, the severe weather led to an outage of what's known as Amazon's Elastic Compute Cloud Center in North Virginia. The result was that services such as Netflix, Pinterest, Instagram, and other popular sites, including QRZ, became unavailable just after midnight Eastern Time on Saturday, June 30th. According to a posting on QRZ by AA7BQ after service was restored, Amazon's service health dashboard indicated that there were power issues in its North Virginia data center. He said that the outage did not affect his servers, but did cause a complete database failure. After waiting all night for Amazon to restore the QRZ.com data, he restored the information from an automated backup. According to Lloyd, the outage underscores the vulnerabilities of depending on the public cloud versus having your own data center. For those who have never heard the term cloud computing, it's the delivery of computation and storage capacity as a service to a community of end recipients. As such, cloud computing entrusts services with a user's data, software, and computation over a network. The name comes from the use of a cloud-shaped symbol to signify the service. A new DX record has been achieved by the aging Oscar 7 ham radio satellite, this between Wyatt Dirks, AC0RA in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, and Bill Zarella, OM3BD in the Slovak Republic. Their GPS measured 7,849-kilometer QSO between grid squares EN31VX and JN88MF surpassed the prior 7,843-kilometer record set by Luciano Fabricio, PY5LF, and Joe Spandler, K3SZH, by 6 kilometers back in 2010. Take a listen to what a record-breaking weak signal satellite contact sounds like after a bit of digital audio magic on our part. To make this record happen, Wyatt had to wake up at 3 a.m., drive to a hill an hour away from his home, set up his station, and work OM3BD before sunrise at 09:55 UTC July 2nd. To make the path, OM3BD was running a Yaesu FT847 with SP2000 preamp fed by a pair of 10-element Yagis on 2 meters and an 8-element Yagi for 70 centimeters. On this side of the Atlantic, AC0RA also used a Yaesu FT847 transceiver with a 7-element Yagi on 2 meters and a 12-element Yagi on 70 centimeters. It appears that an even longer distance is attainable. Wyatt says he's looking for a suitable place from which they can try before Bill leaves Slovakia in mid-July, and we'll keep you posted. You'll find out more online at tinyurl.com/AO7-DX-record. celebrating 35 years of uninterrupted service to the worldwide ham radio community. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the WA4TEN repeater serving Bremerton, Washington. Erin King, AK4JG, a 17-year-old from Columbus, Georgia, who refounded her high school's radio club and then lofted a ham radio carrying balloon to over 90,000 feet, recovered the flight data and used it to produce a truly striking video of that flight, has been named as recipient of the 2012 Amateur Radio Newsline Young Ham of the Year Award. Here with the details, Mark Abramovich, NT3V.
Whoa, thank you. That's awesome. Ah, that's really cool. Thank you so much. I'm very excited.
And that, the reaction from Amateur Radio Newsline's Young Ham of the Year winner, Erin King, upon learning in a telephone call that she had been selected as this year's winner of the prestigious award. Erin, who is the daughter of Paul K4ETY and Patricia King of Columbus, Georgia, has been a ham since only 2009 and holds an extra class license. Erin says, ironically, she was in attendance at last year's Huntsville Ham Fest when the Young Ham of the Year award is presented, and never dreamed she'd be the one nominated and chosen to receive the next one.
Went to Huntsville and saw the Young Ham last year, and I was like, that is so awesome. You know, I feel so happy for her and everything, and I'm just like flabbergasted. I thought that I would like not be eligible anymore, and I'd like forgotten about it, and now this like just came out of nowhere, and I'm like super excited. So thank you so much.
Erin just graduated from Columbus High School and got involved in her freshman year in a program that would turn her focus to technology.
When I went there, I got involved in robotics, and I got interested in computer science and electrical engineering. I joined a program called the Space Program, which eventually led to how I started to get involved with ham radio. But then after that, I got more involved in computer science as well, took some computer science classes, and I applied to MIT. And that's where I'll be going to college next year. I was accepted early action at MIT, and I'll be studying computer science and electrical engineering there. And I'm also going to be joining the ham radio club that they have there.
Erin says ham radio came naturally.
My teacher was a ham, and he was my robotics coach as well. And I went on a couple of balloon launches with him. After I got my tech license, I continued doing balloon stuff, and that was really how I got involved with it. It was like a cool thing that really exposed me to it to begin with. And then after that, I joined two local radio clubs, and I upgraded my license to general the next year and then extra last year. And I've had some fun outside of ballooning since then. I've done some, you know, like field day, a little bit of contesting. The school club roundup is something that I've done a couple of years. And I started a club at my school with the call sign W4CHS for Columbus High School.
Erin really got some attention when she got her acceptance to MIT in a mailing tube. The school suggested the students hack their tubes, meaning do something cool with them. Erin did just that, using her ballooning and ham radio skills to send her tube to the edge of space, equipped with a camera, GPS units, and a radio for APRS tracking, and a parachute for the fall to Earth. She produced a video that's posted on YouTube. You can find the link at our website, arnewsline.org. Erin says right now amateur radio is something she shares with her dad, but there is a link in her mom's family to the hobby.
My dad actually kind of inherited my great-grandfather's call sign. K4ETY is my mom's grandfather's call sign that he had, and I never met him, but that's just kind of an interesting, fun family fact.
Erin says she's hoping to get her sister Rachel, who's 15, interested in amateur radio. She says her 16-year-old brother Brandon really doesn't demonstrate desire to jump in just yet. Erin says she's a well-rounded person who not only enjoys space, but the undersea world as well.
Scuba diving is something that I started a couple of years ago with my mom and my sister, and my brother just got certified last year, and it's really fun, and that's kind of something that not a lot of people know about me, is that I'm a certified scuba diver as well as a ham radio operator.
So congratulations to Erin King, AK4JG, Amateur Radio Newsline's latest Young Ham of the Year. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Mark Abramovich, NT3V, in Philadelphia.
The 2012 Amateur Radio Newsline Young Ham of the Year Award will be presented to Erin King, AK4JG, Saturday, August 18th, at the Huntsville Ham Fest in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope to see many of you there. Space Weather reports that a strong solar flare has erupted on the face of the sun. According to the Solar Forecast Reporting Service, a large active sunspot named AR 1515 is growing on the Earth-looking side of the solar disk. On the morning of July 2nd, it erupted, producing an M5.6 class solar flare that ionized the Earth's upper atmosphere with a brief but intense pulse of X-rays and extreme ultraviolet radiation. Space Weather says more eruptions are in the offing as the sunspot turns more towards Earth. These will likely affect radio wave propagation on most of the frequencies used by radio amateurs and other radio-based communicators. For more information, including a video and updates, check spaceweather.com. A happy ending to a long court battle involving the right of a Nevada ham radio operator to install towers and antennas on his own property. You may remember back about 4 years ago when Tom Terramina, K5RC, and the W7RN Comstock Memorial Station crew were in the midst of a big antenna project on Tom's 10-acre homestead outside of Virginia City. Terramina had obtained a building permit for two rotating monopoles. The bases had been installed, and there were other existing antenna structures on the property. Suddenly, the county issued a stop work order on grounds that were never clear. The U.S. District Court would later write, "The court is sympathetic to plaintiff's frustration with the county's inconsistent interpretation of its zoning ordinances." Well, now, after two trips to the U.S. District Court, the case is closed and K5RC may erect 8 towers. 4 of these will be less than 45 feet tall, the other 4 greater than 45 feet. You can read the full text of his big win online at tinyurl.com/Nevada-antenna-victory. Members of the New York City Amateur Radio Emergency Communications Service provided maritime communication support of the recent Hawaiian Airlines Liberty Challenge. The race took place June 23rd on the rivers of New York Harbor between the ports of New York and New Jersey. The mission of the ham radio volunteers was to be an additional set of eyes and ears on the rescue and safety boats, also to ensure that reliable communications was available in case an emergency condition arose on the water. Team members utilized UHF and VHF repeaters, Simplex and VHF marine radios to communicate with each other to pass messages in regard to race setup, operations, and to other safety boats. They were also in communications with boats in transit in the harbor to operators of the Staten Island Ferry and the U.S. Coast Guard Auxiliary. The radio operators were at this event for 12 hours from 6:30 a.m. to 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time. They were stationed on rescue and safety boats as well as on shore with race officials. This is Ham Radio News for today's radio amateur from the United States of America. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline with links to the world from our only official website at www.arnewsline.org and being relayed by the volunteer services of the following radio amateur. A Northern California amateur radio operator has been issued a $17,000 Notice of Apparent Liability, or NAL. This after the FCC accuses him of operating an unlicensed transmitter on 104.9 megahertz and refusing to permit an inspection of his station. Amateur Radio Newsline's Don Carlson, KQ6 FM, has the details.
In its July 2nd Notice of Apparent Liability, the FCC accuses Brian R. Ragan, KF6EGI of Suisun City, California, of apparently, willfully, and repeatedly violating the Communications Act of 1934 as amended. This by operating an unlicensed radio transmitter and failing to allow an inspection of his station by FCC personnel. According to the FCC order, last February, an FCC agent T-hunted the signal on 104.9 megahertz to Ragan's residence. About 2 weeks later, the agents repeated the exercise to locate the source of a signal on the same frequency after hearing the unlicensed station identifying itself over the air using the call letters KBRS. Again, the chase took them to where Brian R. Ragan, KF6EGI, lived. The agents were able to determine that the signal on 104.9 megahertz exceeded the limits of operation under Part 15 for unlicensed devices. A search of the FCC database showed no authorization issued to Ragan or to anyone else for operation of a broadcast station on 104.9 megahertz in Suisun City. The NAL says the FCC agents heard the station operating in the garage and attempted to inspect the station but did not get any response when they knocked on the resident's door. At this point, the agents posted notice of unlicensed operation on the front door and departed. About 48 hours after the notice was left, a person who identified himself as Brian R. Ragan contacted the FCC concerning the matter. According to the FCC, during the conversation, Ragan admitted to operating a broadcast station on frequency 104.9 megahertz for 6 months. He also told the commission that he was present when the agents were knocking on his door, but was afraid to answer because he heard the agents say that they were with the FCC. Now, in issuing the proposed fine, the FCC says that Brian R. Ragan, by his own admission, consciously operated
operated the station and did so on more than one day. This, says the regulatory agency, makes the apparent violations of the Communications Act both willful and repeated. As to the penalties, the FCC has not only ordered the monetary $17,000 forfeiture, but has also ordered that Ragan must also submit a written statement pursuant to Section 1.16 of the FCC rules. This statement must be signed under penalty of perjury and state that he is in full compliance with Section 301 of the Communications Act and is no longer engaged in the unauthorized operation on 104.9 megahertz or any other frequency for which he has no license. Also, that he will make his authorized amateur radio station available for inspection as required by the FCC rules. While Ragan may request a reduction or cancellation of the $17,000 forfeiture, he must still provide the written statement on or before July 31st. That's also the last date on which he can file an appeal. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Don Carlson, KQ6 FM in Reno.
In the text of the Notice of Apparent Liability, the Commission said that Ragan, as a licensed amateur radio operator for at least 6 years, should have known that any radio equipment at his station must be made available for inspection at any time when requested by the FCC. Also, he should be aware of the proper operation of his amateur station in accordance with the FCC rules. Two unlicensed broadcasters in Massachusetts will have to pay fines of $15,000 each, this after the FCC turns down both of their appeals. Amateur Radio Newsline's Bruce Tennant, K6PZW, has the details.
In 2010, the agency had fined each man $15,000 for allegedly operating a station called Dats Hits Radio on 99.7 megahertz. In their appeals, both Morris and Brown told the FCC they didn't respond to the original notice nor pay the fine because they couldn't get advice on actions to take and how to file a response. But in its order denying the appeals, the FCC noted that Morris and Brown broke the law by operating an unauthorized station despite repeated warnings and letters from the commission ordering them to stop, actions which the FCC found particularly egregious. The FCC also noted that once a public notice of action is released, petitions for reconsideration must be filed within 30 days. Morris and Brown filed a day late, and the FCC dismissed their petitions as untimely. In the end, the agency upheld the fine for both men, saying in its decision their explanation was not sufficient to excuse a late response to the original notice. From the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Bruce Tennant, K6PZW in Los Angeles.
Morris and Brown were given the customary 30 days to pay the outstanding fines. The so-called Janet Jackson wardrobe malfunction indecency case, which led to increased profanity delay equipment installations for both TV and radio stations, has come to the end of the legal road. This after the United States Supreme Court says that it will not review a lower court's ruling that overturned the FCC's $550,000 fine against CBS Corporation for televising a fleeting view of Janet Jackson's breast during the live 2004 Super Bowl halftime show. A federal appeals court had ruled the fine was arbitrary and capricious because it was much larger than indecency fines had been previously, before the commission began issuing larger fines for so-called fleeting indecent utterances. Chief Justice John Roberts agreed with the other justices not to hear the FCC's appeal. In a concurring opinion, he noted the FCC had changed its indecency policy to include fleeting utterances, supporting the arbitrary and capricious arguments, but he also warned that any future wardrobe malfunctions will not be protected going forward. The Supreme Court last month tossed out FCC indecency fines against Fox and ABC on narrow procedural grounds. At that time, it told the regulatory agency that it is free to update its broadcast indecency guidelines. For their part, broadcasters have insisted for years that the FCC's indecency guidelines are vague and chill free speech. A ham radio operator who serves in Congress says that it's time to make the overall media landscape more of a level playing ground. Amateur Radio Newsline's Cheryl Lassick, K9BIK, has the details.
House Subcommittee on Communications and Technology Chairman Greg Walden, W7EQI, of Oregon, says the way the FCC regulates traditional video providers is based on a bygone era. According to Walden, broadcast stations are going mobile and wireless carriers are streaming video at the same time that programmers and pay TV providers are filling smartphone and tablet screens with their content. Meantime, new entities are coming to market like Hulu, Netflix, YouTube, and Roku, and the Communications Act does not apply to these emerging services. Walden is not suggesting that lawmakers expand video distribution regulation. Quite the opposite. He says that could harm competition from emerging Internet video providers, just as existing cable, satellite, and broadcast providers and programmers are experimenting with Internet distribution. However, if lawmakers don't intend to apply the old rules to new participants, then he says the Congress must recognize the inequity of continuing to apply those same old rules to traditional players such as TV stations, cable, and satellite providers. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Cheryl Lassick, K9BIK in Zion, Illinois.
Representative Walden made those remarks during his subcommittee's hearing on the future of video. Billy Joe Lewis, W4ZDP, has been honored by Thomasville Amateur Radio Club for founding the club in 1953 and for his dedication to the club for many years. Lewis became an amateur radio operator prior to the Second World War. He served on the Burma Road during World War II, working many years with his brother Logan Lewis at Lewis Enterprises, and spent decades serving as Thomas County Fire Chief. Along with being a respected businessman and dedicated public servant, Lewis founded the club in 1953 and served as treasurer for 48 years. His dedication to Thomasville Amateur Radio Club over many decades has resulted in a strong and vibrant organization dedicated to the radio arts and to the public. The award was presented to W4ZDP at the annual ARRL Field Day event held at the Thomas County Ambulance Service in Thomasville, Georgia on June 23rd. UK radio amateur Colin Thomas, G3PSM, has been awarded Germany's Deutsche Amateur Radio Club Golden Badge of Honor. This for his work in achieving an amateur radio allocation at 472 kHz. According to the German National Amateur Radio Society, G3PSM was involved in the European Conference of Postal and Telecommunications Administrations, or CEPT, preparatory progress meetings, and at the WRC 12 conference itself. As a result of his skillful lobbying at many meetings, the CEPT proposal for an amateur radio allocation near 600 meters was fully supported and eventually granted. G3PSM received his award from the DARC chairman Stefan Schopp, DL7ATE, at a recent society-hosted dinner. And while we're handing out roses, we say congratulations to the Westside Amateur Radio Club for their 60th birthday. Headquartered just across the Mississippi River from New Orleans, Louisiana, the Westside Club, founded July 1, 1952, is the oldest continuously operating amateur radio club in the New Orleans, Louisiana area. A special event station is in the planning stages, and we'll have full details just as soon as we know them. Serving the needs of the world's ham radio community 52 weeks a year since mid-1976, we are the Amateur Radio Newsline. With links to the world from our only official website at www.arnewsline.org and being relayed by the volunteer services of the following radio amateur. Tasmania's first D-Star repeater is on the air. VK7RRR is the southernmost D-Star repeater in the world and the first and only such public digital voice repeater in Tasmania. The system operates in the 70-centimeter band, listening on 432.725 megahertz and transmitting on 438.125 megahertz at 50 watts power out. Prior to the establishment of VK7RRR, Tasmania was the only Australian state or territory that did not have at least one D-Star repeater. Students at Penn State University have designed and built a state-of-the-art supercapacitor-type battery for the next amateur radio Arisat satellite. The battery was built to handle 16 charge cycles in a given 24-hour period. That will power the satellite in dark orbits while the solar panels are not in sunlight. Dakshina Murthy Ballour is an assistant professor of electrical and computer engineering at Penn State. According to Ballour, the unit is a simple design. They flip a switch and they throw it out into space. Ballour supervised the battery work, which counted as the student's senior project. More can be found in cyberspace at live.psu.edu/story/60125. The United States Broadcasting Board of Governors has criticized the Cambodian Ministry of Information. This for a decision forbidding FM stations in Cambodia to air Khmer language election programming from Radio Free Asia and the Voice of America during last week's elections. According to a release, the ban involved five stations. The Broadcasting Board of Governors said that Radio Free Asia and the Voice of America play a critical role in informing the Cambodian electorate on fundamental election issues. They also provide a platform for the full spectrum of political opinions in the country. Presiding Governor Michael Linton stated that news and information programs help shape a well-educated citizenry and should be encouraged, not denied. These attempts to silence Radio Free Asia and the Voice of America are counterproductive to the goals of building a democratic society in Cambodia. Participants in CQ Magazine's WPX award program are now use the American Radio Relay League's Logbook of the World, or LOTW, system to apply for the WPX award and its endorsements. Amateurs will be able to use LOTW logs to generate lists of confirmed contacts to be submitted for WPX credit. Standard Logbook of the World credit fees and CQ award fees will apply. Logbook of the World support for the WPX award program went live July 2nd. On the air, keep an ear open for Moroccan amateur radio operators to use the special prefix 5C13 through July 27th. This in celebration of the 13th anniversary of the crowning of Mohammed VI as King of Morocco. Stations heard as of airtime are 5C13IG, 5C13KD, 5C13NK, 5C13SG, and 5C13YZ. QSL is directed by each operator. Also be on the lookout for Netherlands special event station PC100NOM to be active through July 29th. This operation commemorates the 100th anniversary of the Netherlands Open Air Museum in the city of Arnhem. The operator is PA0FAW, who's using CW, SSB, and PSK on the various high-frequency bands. QSL via PA0FAW, either direct, via the Bureau, or electronically using EQSL. SWL reports are also welcome. NDX, N6NB, and W6TAI will be active as E51YNB and E51TAI from Rarotonga for the IARU High Frequency World Championships July 14th and 15th. Their operation is expected to start a few days before the contest and last several days after the competition ends. They'll be on 40 through 15 meters using SSB only, QSL both call signs via N6NB. Members of the Trinidad and Tobago Amateur Radio Society will be active as 9Y4HQ during the same IARU HF World Championships on July 14th and 15th. Operations will be on all of the high-frequency bands using CW and SSB. QSL only via DF2RG, either direct or via the Bureau. ZS1WY is currently active from Mozambique as C91IW and is expected to be there for the next year. However, he is there working, and operations may be limited. Recent QSN reports show he was on 160 meters QSL via ZS1WY. A group of hams from the Quito Amateur Radio Club will be on the air as HD081QRC, that's Hotel Delta 081 QRC, between July 14th and the 22nd to commemorate the founding of that organization 81 years ago. Activity will be on all bands using CW and SSB. Equipment will include both modern and some beautifully restored vintage radios, courtesy of HC1BG, QSL, HC1JQ direct, or via the Bureau. And lastly, W5JON tells Amateur Radio Newsline he'll once again be operating as V47JA from his vacation home overlooking Calypso Bay on St. Kitts. Listen out for John from July 12th through August 2nd on 80 through 6 meters using SSB. He also plans to take part in the RSGB-sponsored Islands on the Air contest. QSLs to W5JON, either direct or via Logbook of the World. And finally this week, a new spire built to replace the fallen twin towers of the World Trade Center in New York City will also become an antenna site. Amateur Radio Newsline's Jim Davis, W2JKD, has the details on this emerging story. Jim.
The Durst organization that controls New York City's One World Trade Center in a partnership with the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey plans to add an installation for FM radio and television transmission antennas in the building's 408-foot spire. One that will ultimately bring the new building's height to 1,776 feet and make it the tallest building in North America. The Empire State Building, 1,250 feet tall, with its 204-foot antenna tower, is currently the home to 19 FM stations and most of the city's digital television transmitters. Many radio and television broadcasters migrated to the Empire State site after terrorist attacks of 9/11 caused the collapse of the World Trade Center's Twin Towers in Lower Manhattan. Yet to be determined is whether any of the city's FM broadcasters will leave their current primary sites at Empire State Building for the new location at One World Trade Center, or if they will treat the new building spire primarily as a backup site. I'm Jim Davis, W2JKD.
One thing that's pretty obvious, at the prices being quoted, it's unlikely that any ham radio repeaters will find a home at the new broadcast antenna site. But then again, one should never doubt the resourcefulness of New York City area hams. With thanks to Allen Labs, AMSAT, the ARRL, the CGC Communicator, CQ Magazine, the FCC, the Ohio Penn DX Bulletin, Radio Netherlands, RAIN, the RSGB, the Southgate News, and Australia's WIA News, that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. Our email address is newsline@arnewsline.org. More information is available at Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website. You'll find that at www.arnewsline.org. You can also write to us or support us at Amateur Radio Newsline, 28197 Robin Avenue, Santa Clarita, California, 91350. Before we go, this newscast marks the beginning of our 35th year of service to the world's amateur radio community. We find it hard to believe that so many years have gone by since Jim Hendershot, WA6VQP, with some help from Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, produced the very first Westlink Radio Network newscast, which eventually became Amateur Radio Newsline. That was some 1,820 weeks ago. This is week 1,821, and believe it or not, in all this time, we've never missed a newscast release date. With that in mind, we want to take this opportunity to say thank you to all of those who have come forward over the years as members of our all-volunteer team of writers, producers, reporters, and news anchors. It's their selfless devotion that's made all of this possible, and all of you and our vast worldwide audience who have so graciously supported our efforts these many years. To you, we make the promise to continue to bring you the news of amateur radio and personal communications as we have the past 1,821 weeks. Also, to do our very best to keep improving our air product as we proceed into the weeks, months, and years ahead. And let me end this week by simply saying thanks to all of you for being part of the Amateur Radio Newsline family. Without your encouragement and ongoing support, we would have no reason to exist. It is you who make it all worthwhile. So for now, with Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, at the editor's desk the last 35 years, I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW, saying 73 for the 1,821st time. And as always, we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline, copyright 2012. All rights are reserved.